Letty's bodyguard took a step toward me. Letty just turned her head, and the bodyguard froze, her fist raised to her chest.
There's no need for violence. We're all going to use our words.
I just did. I can use them again. Go fuck yourself, Letty.
See, this is why it's a good thing Padma's union and not still with the big three. She doesn't let up, even when she knows she's wrong. A steel will this one has. The union will forgive your debt in its entirety if you can stop Sarian from starting his strike. I don't care how you do it, as long as it doesn't end up with him in the hospital or dead.
You've got muscle and you're afraid to use it? Maybe you're not cut out for office after all.
Muscle is just another tool in the box. I don't want to break Sarian. I just want him stopped. I want any talk of a strike stopped.
So we can't even use our words now?
A word like strike can hurt a whole lot of people. It starts out as a whisper, then it turns into talk, then it's shouted by people throwing rocks. If there's no cane harvested, we don't get money. We don't get money, people start to starve, and then it gets really ugly.
Then maybe you can loosen up the purse strings.
You think I don't want to? You know how many times I've gone over our budget, Padma? Should I cancel preschool or elder care? Should I shut down the court system or food distribution?
Is it that bad?
You think I'd be doing this if it were good? Padma, I am begging you to help me. Just a week of work, and I'll cancel the debt.
Turn off the jammer and say that again.
I can't let anyone else know about this.
Then I can't take this deal. I'm closing the door now.
Wait.
How do I know you'll follow through on your part of the bargain? I don't work for handshakes. You put something on the public or it's no go.
If I talk about this, it's going to backfire. If Sarian thinks you're working for me, then you won't get far. And if anyone else on the executive council knows, they won't let me forgive the debt. I need you, Padma. This planet, this union, we all need you. Can't the Sky Queen of Justice help?
I should say no just for you invoking that song.
But you'll do it.
Okay. Say I agree to this. What guarantee do I have that you'll follow through?
You'll just have to trust me.
You broke into my house, Letty. I'd say trust is in short supply.
Okay. I'll remove $50,000 from your debt right now.
I thought you said there wasn't any money.
There's money, and there's discretionary funds. I've been saving for emergencies. I can move numbers around, and $50,000 are gone from your total. I know it's not much, and it'll take a week or so to clear, but I hope you'll take it as a sign of my sincerity.
I don't like it.
You don't have to. You just have to do the job.
Letty held out her hand, and like a fool, I shook it. I sat back in my overstuffed chair after I gave it a quick wipe down. God only knew what horrible political diseases Letty had brought in with her, and poked around on the public for any mention of Sarian's churches. Well, first I blinked up my debt balance. Sure enough, a pending credit for 50,000 yuan had appeared. Granted, she could revoke it if I pissed her off, but for now, Letty had followed through. That meant I had to do the same. What I found made my guts shrivel. In the past 3 months, Sarian had set up 22 churches. Most were scattered around the city, with one lone outpost in the Kampong. He had certainly been busy since his release. Now I had to figure out who he was pulling back into his orbit. I blinked up who had been inside the churches just to see how many Union people had fallen under his spell. A few hundred, it turned out, but there were a dozen people whom I had met face to face. That would be as good a place to start as any. The sun had set when I stepped out of my building onto Samarkand Road. Most of the workers had clocked out, and the swing shift was wrapping up their dinners. I blinked my pie into hidden mode as I walked down Samarkand to Kuthrapali Avenue, Brushhead's main drag. I could have called Sirikit to take me around, but I had to move under my own power tonight. I grabbed a bike from a share rack and hopped into traffic. I hadn't had a chance to do this in 16 months, just ride and take in everything zipping past me. Most of the people on my list had also hidden themselves. But for tonight, there were some Union people I could find. Plus, I really wanted to corner Li Huang myself and find out what her deal was. I sent out texts to 20 people. If you see this woman, tell me, and I will buy you a beer and burritos for a week. I attached a picture of Li Huang, one where she was working the cane press, laughing at a joke Marolo had told her. In the meantime, I would start with the first person on my list of Sarian's congregants. Serena Lorenz. A lifetime ago, she had been a shift supervisor at the Kane refinery at South Reach. Before she testified against Sarian at his trial, she'd moved to another refinery on the Greenbelt, one that wasn't a death trap. My pie highlighted my route as I rode down towards the coast. Serena's pie placed her in a pub at Usinori and Lowland, a place I'd never been to called the Mermaid's Kick. I dropped my bike in a share stand and watched the clientele. They were all clean and wore nice clothes, like they'd scrubbed up before coming here. The sign was a picture of a mermaid with cornrows, bulging biceps, and clenched fists. Maybe it would be my kind of place. The minute I walked through the door, I realized it would not. The lights were bright and harsh, the colors were muted pastels, and the people inside were punching at speed bags or doing yoga. A sign behind the bar boasted 8 kinds of fruit juices and 2 raw vegetable entrees. It wasn't a pub. It was a fitness studio that had gutted and taken over a pub. I looked closer at the customers and saw they were all doing horrible impressions of people who worked for the Big Three. Their hair was slick and sculptured. Their clothes were tailored to be stiff and uncomfortable. Everyone clenched their glasses at chest level, like we were taught to do in B school, and everyone looked into each other's eyes with unblinking stares. I saw all kinds of indenture markings: medical research, nuclear engineering, heavy entertainment. All of these people were acting as if they were still living the life corporate.
Can we interface in a meaningful professional interaction?
A woman at my shoulder had a funny mark underneath her tattoo, a merlion wrapped around a planet, Liao Khan colonial preparation, and I blinked her face into the public to find her profile. Ernestine Andrada, a union liaison for the refinery at Buke's Point. She had breached 6 years ago. I realized the blotch on her cheek was her union fist covered by foundation. Fuck no. I pushed my way towards Serena's dot. She was in the next room where she stood in front of a seated group of people all wearing workout gear. Serena wore a sweat-stained red V, and she exchanged a series of furious punches with a gray-haired man half her size. The man swept her leg and she hit the floor, only to bounce back with the kind of speed that would have made Michelle Yeoh rise from her grave on dead earth and cheer. She knocked her sparring partner to the ground, then stepped back so the man could get to his feet. They bowed and he sat back down. I glanced at the wall. There was a schedule of classes posted. Tonight's was self-esteem through self-defense.
I don't expect you to be able to do that right away. But if you continue with your practice, you'll be faster, stronger, and better equipped to take on your daily challenges. And we all want to be prepared for anything that might happen, right?
Yes, Chief Wu!
She bowed, and they bowed, and everyone went into the next room for fruit smoothies. I blinked up my buffer from Sarian's trial. The woman on the stand was definitely not the woman toweling herself off at the front of the room. 2 years ago, Serena Lorenz looked exhausted and ill, like she was going to throw up and pass out. Now, her skin flushed from an evening of beating up people, she looked like she could knock out the world with one punch.
You here for the next class? You're going to have to put on appropriate clothing.
Please don't hit me.
Why would I?
I have no idea, but that seems like a good thing to say in a place like this. The walls were decorated with wah-wah motivational art. Nude people climbing mountains, lines of happy customers buying Nutrifood, executives trading grooming tips and social diseases. Though I have to admit, I'm not sure what kind of place it is.
Nostalgia, or something like it.
For the life corporate?
You ever miss it?
Hell no.
That was a pretty quick answer.
Because it's the truth. Working for Wawa was a disaster. I gave everything to climb the ladder, and it almost killed me.
How?
That's none of your business.
Then what is? What are you doing here, Padma?
I should ask you the same question. I realize we don't know each other, but after all that time basking in Evanroot Sarian's bullshit, you really want to tell me you're longing for the days before you breached?
The one has little to do with the other.
Serena picked up her bag.
You want a beverage?
No, I want a drink.
With an attitude like that, you should have some juice. My treat.
I followed her out of the room. At the bar, Serena got 2 glasses and filled them from the taps. She gave me one. It smelled like lawn trimmings.
To nutritional optimization.
When I realized it was a toast, I clinked glasses and slugged it in one go.
It's better if you sip.
What was it?
Sea grapes, collards, and ong choy, all locally grown.
Well, I can sure taste it.
You must think we're all mad to be here.
There was a time when stuff like this was my life. 19-hour standard time, we would clock out and socialize with our colleagues, try out the latest improved intoxicants, attempt the latest sexual positions, work for another couple of hours in our housing, then collapse and do it all over again. I thought that was all there was, until I breached. Then I learned that you can leave work, hang out with friends, drink stuff that people had made with care, fall in love, and try to build a future on our own.
I remember feeling like that, too.
But you don't anymore?
I know why you're here, Padma. And it's not like you think.
What isn't?
I don't want to go back to Thronehill. Not now, not ever. You know why I breached? Because everyone in my department was offered promotions if they went and got brain surgery. It was an experiment to see if Liaocon could squeeze a little more productivity out of us. Everyone would get implants to regulate adenosine and melatonin, all to keep people awake as long as possible. Do it for 18 weeks, measure the results, bam! Instant raise in pay and benefits.
Did you do it?
No, but I wanted to. I wanted that promotion so bad, I was willing to let someone cut into my skull and keep me awake for 18 weeks. I put in for a transfer to a new colony just so I'd have the opportunity to jump ship. Took me a while to get here, and I would never go back. But my life had an order back then. You get that, right?
But it also didn't have freedom.
Freedom is an illusion. Come here and you're free to starve. Free to get left outside in a hurricane. Even the people doing the worst corporate work had guaranteed income and bennies. Not here.
It is guaranteed.
Then where is it? Everyone here has been passed over for promotion, or they've been bumped from their housing, or they've just been screwed in some way because someone higher up in the union could do so. And I'm not just talking about people in contract slots. Everyone here is a shareholder, but their share income is drying up. They can't live on it anymore, and there isn't enough work to make ends meet.
So they dress up and come here?
How is that different from going to a bar and getting loaded? People are hurting, and they need something to take away the pain. If it's not rum or Chiba, why not pretend you're back in a time and place where everything made sense?
Because it's just so fucked up.
Our lives are fucked up, and they're only going to get worse.
Why's that?
You wouldn't know, what with your distillery and all. You're part of the problem.
Because I make rum?
Because you consume cane? You need it, just like the big three, just like everyone. I've spent my entire adult life processing that stuff. We grow it, and we burn it, and we grow more, because it's the way we've always done things. We don't try and harness the sun, or the wind, or the tides, not when we can just grow our own hydrocarbons.
And what's wrong with that?
Because it still takes people to make it happen, and I saw how the big three were grinding people up. I breached, and now I see that the union is doing the same. There is a lot of anger out there, in the city and in the Kampong. You need to get ready for what's coming.
That's why you're teaching that class?
Uh-huh. That, and it's cheaper than therapy.
Sounds like you've got it dialed in. What I don't get is why you go to Sarian's church.
I don't know what you're talking about.
On Luyua Street, about 6 blocks from here. You've visited 3 times a week for the past 6 weeks.
Are you tracking me?
I'm tracking a bunch of stuff, because none of it makes any sense. Why would someone like you fall back into his orbit after what he did?
You don't know me.
She went for the door. I waited until she had left before bolting after her. She walked up the belt, her head down and her steps quick. Serena! I ran. She didn't stop or turn around, not until I put a hand on her shoulder. Serena grabbed my wrist and spun me around, smacking my face into a cafe's window. I glanced down at a couple, cups halfway to their open mouths. I tried to smile, but it probably looked like a grimace as she drove her elbow into my back.
You don't touch me. You understand?
Okay.
You have no idea what I've been through.
You're right.
And I don't need your pity.
She gave my arm an extra crank.
Oh, okay!
Serena eased up enough for me to peel my face off the window. I backed away, my hands up.
I don't want to cause trouble, okay, Serena? I just want to know why. I went to his place on Hawks today.
Then why did you come to me?
I didn't stay there. I just heard that he was out of prison and had started a church. I had to see for myself. He tried to kill me, remember? Remember the trial?
I don't know how he got out early either. I wanted him to rot. It was so hard, running that refinery to keep scrimping for parts and expertise. People got hurt all the time, and it was on me. You know what that's like? To have everyone think you're incompetent when the problems start from above you?
Uh-huh. I work in the lowest part of the water plant. I know.
I went to Liu Yuhua because I wanted to punch his lights out. I wanted him to tell me why he built that secret refinery.
Did he?
He did. He said he was an asshole and that he was wrong and that I should have been given everything I needed to be successful. I didn't believe him, and I told him so.
I didn't either.
He said he didn't expect me to believe him, but he wanted to make amends. He had to show me that he was sorry, that he'd changed. He asked me to spend the day with him, bringing food and clothes and meds to people who needed them. I said he was full of shit, but I went. Just curious, I guess. We went all over the city, finding people hiding in tenements and hovels, and I kept running them through the public and seeing that they were supposed to get all kinds of help, but weren't. Our system has broken down, Padma. It's just like the old refinery, teetering along, ready to collapse. So yeah, I go to his church, because I'm actually fixing things. The union's supposed to take care of its members, whether they're working slots or they're living off pensions. Everyone's supposed to have a floor to hold them up, but it's punched full of holes. I don't know who's letting that happen, if it's the executive committee or the prez or what. What I do know is that Evan Root Sarian is committed to helping out everyone who's getting left behind.
But you trust him?
I probably never will. But I trust the work that he's doing. I can see it right in my own neighborhood. I know 3 different people on disability who aren't getting their pensions, and that means they go hungry. Sarian's church has kept them fed. I trust that's going to make their lives better, even though things are going to get worse first.
Is that why you're teaching people how to punch each other out?
I'm showing people how to take care of themselves.
By beating up their neighbors?
What neighbors?
Serena pointed at the couple in the cafe, who were staring at us with worry in their eyes.
Do you know everyone in your building? Do you know everyone on your block?
You just talked about people in your neighborhood.
But I don't know them. This city's changing so fast that no one knows who's who anymore. People come in from the kampong, they leave for other parts of the planet, they don't stick around long. No one wants to put down roots, they just want to get by until they can move on to something bigger.
Serena, aren't you still union? Don't you have a voice? Why aren't you and everyone in that place all up in arms and pounding on your ward chair's front door?
Because our ward chair was the guy I sparred with tonight. He's with us too. There's a storm coming, Padma. You better take cover now.
I watched her go up the greenbelt. Overhead, the night sky was perfectly clear. I walked into the first bar I could find, made sure it was actually a bar, then ordered a beer. I took a few sips, glad that it was Hefeweizen and not wheat juice. I finished half the beer and blinked up texts to my little surveillance network to see if any of them had leads on Li Huang. Odd Dupree, an old colleague from the plant, thought he did, though his pie and his brain were acting up a lot, thanks to his indenture time as a pharmacological test subject. He sent me a fuzzy picture of a woman who looked a lot like Li Huang. She was walking past a glowing sign written in Cyrillic. The picture didn't have a land stamp, but my pie could locate the sign. A Serbian bakery in Globus Heights. I texted Odd to trail her as best he could. 30 minutes later, I clunked the bike into a rack and slid out of the saddle. Odd gangled at a table outside Lipa's bakery.
You want some proya?
He held up a plate of cornbread as I collapsed into the seat opposite him.
You look like you need some carbs.
It took everything I had not to dive face first into the plate and gorge. I tore off a hunk and chewed, taking the minimal amount of time to swallow before taking the next bite.
I started coming here a year ago. It's a great spot. Plus, it's close to church.
I didn't know you were a churchgoer, Odd.
Glenn and I started coming here a few months ago, I think. I'm still kind of fuzzy on keeping time, but it's getting better.
He rubbed his beard, the whiskers covering most of his old indenture tattoo. You're looking a lot more relaxed.
It's being a part of something bigger than me. I like that.
What about the union?
Well, that was nice at first. You know, when I breached.
I remember, Odd. I signed you up.
You sure did. You helped me find a flat and get treatment for my condition. But you also got me that horrible job.
Which I also got you out of.
Yeah, but that took, what, 8 years?
Odd, if I had any control over how many people breached, do you think I would have let you stew there for so long?
No, of course not. But still, I felt kind of forgotten. At church, it's not like that. We're actually doing something.
Like what?
Oh, preschool, meal delivery for shut-ins, extensive medical background interviews.
What?
Uh-huh. We're building a database of all the conditions all of us breaches have as a result of our indentures. There's a lot of messed up people here, Padma. Genetic disorders, physical handicaps, all kinds of mental trauma. You know anyone with that?
If I knew anyone with those problems, I'd tell them to talk with their ward chair, like I used to do with you.
But did you all the time? Even before all this business with the lifter and your distillery? I always felt like you spent more time at Big Lily's than you did going around and talking with people.
That's bullshit, Odd, and you know it. I'm sorry. I know I can get a little heated.
I think you need to come to church with me.
I'd rather you tell me about the woman I asked you to find.
Come with me and you'll see.
The church was a block away, halfway down a dead-end alley off Lutchen Avenue. There were no guards outside, and the doors were wide open. I don't think this is the place for me.
I'll save a seat for you.
Odd ducked under the doorway. I peeked around the corner and saw a room similar to the one on Hawks. There was the table with food, there was another with clothes, and there was an altar. 50 ragged, happy people smiled as they swayed to the music. Sarian wasn't here in person, but he was on a battered 2-meter-wide screen hanging from a corner. Maybe every service was networked through worship. I made sure to keep out of sight of any cameras or eyeballs. A sunburned woman stepped up to Sarian. She had a salt and pepper plate that went down to the small of her back. She turned to face the camera, her dark, shark eyes glinting in the light. It was the woman who'd hopped into Lee Wong's lorry. The light glinted off her glass supernova fist pin.
I'm Serafina Moss, fresh out of jail. I found meaning in my life after joining the temple.
Peace and joy to you.
And also to you.
Lift up your heart.
We lift them up together.
Lift up your fist.
We lift them up together.
Now let us all go in peace to love and serve one another.
The congregation hugged each other as the screen flicked off. I scanned their faces until I saw Lee Huang. She had always looked relaxed at work. Here, she seemed ready to fall asleep. Her eyelids were heavy and she kept swaying even though the music had stopped. People filed out, some of them giving me stoned nods, others hurrying off into the night. After a few minutes, Odd beckoned to me from the soup table. I squared my shoulders and marched in, keeping watch on Lee Huang from the corner of my eye.
You hungry?
No, thank you. I had enough proya. I eyed the soup, wishing my pie had a working chromatograph. Sarian was no chemist, but he certainly knew a lot from his time at the refinery.
It was good, wasn't it?
Delicious. What was the deal with the fists, Odd?
It's a reminder that we're all in this together.
Really? I touched the fist tattoo on my cheek, right below my old colonial directorate ink. See, I thought the fist symbolized how we would all come to each other's defense if the Big Three tried to screw us.
Then what do we do when the Union screws us, Padma? An attack on one is an attack on all.
Is that what Sarian's telling you? That the Union, the group that's protected us, is attacking us?
What else do you call it? You don't think it's a form of violence, what's going on? People getting booted from their homes, getting left behind. That's against the first clause, as far as I'm concerned.
No, it's exactly what Sarian used to do when he was still a ward chair. Every chance he got, he would moan about how hard things were in Sow's Reach and that he needed extra funds to feed orphans and re-educate single fathers. And do you remember what he did with all that money?
Is there a problem?
I looked over my shoulder. Lee Huang stood there with two goonish-looking people. She wore a supernova fist pin, this one made from stainless steel.
You have some nerve coming here, Padma.
Really?
All this time, I thought you were a good boss. But now I know you're just another parasite sucking value and life away from me.
Ah, that's why you walked off your job without telling Marolo or me?
My job was a joke, pressing cane for pennies.
You made 40 yuan an hour when other distillers pay 20. You got a month of paid vacation, medical, dental, education grants, and a better pension than the union pays. The two goons looked at each other. One of them, a woman with a shaved head, leaned over to Li Huang.
Really? That's a sweet deal.
It was garbage is what it was. It was wage slavery.
No, it was work. I pointed at the tattoo on my cheek. This was a hell of a lot closer to slavery than you or any other freeborn will ever know.
And there it is. The superiority of the breach comes out.
All right. You want to play who's more morally superior? Put on your big girl pants and get ready, kid, because I've been winning this game since before you were a fetus. How are your parents, by the way? They're still getting the remittances from your paycheck, right? The one that's helped them buy a more efficient digester and those new PVs? Your mom wrote me a letter thanking me for your pay. She can get those lung meds again.
You think you can buy my parents off? Boo wouldn't need those meds if she hadn't been breathing in smoke from slash and burns her whole life.
I like your mother a lot, but you can't pin it on me or the union if she worked illegal farms.
She did what she had to do. She had to keep us alive.
By not coming into the city? By not finding a better gig?
What better gig?
Maybe one working on a distillery. You know, like the one you have. The other goon, a man with scars on his forehead, leaned over Li Huang's shoulder and gave me a smile.
Excuse me. Do you have any openings?
Li Huang spun around and shot him a look so sharp it cut. The goon shrank back. Looks like you've got some pull around here.
What do you care, exploiter?
If you want to call someone names, Li Huang, it helps to use the right ones. I may be a lot of things, but I have never exploited you or any of your coworkers. I'm always a phone call away if you need to talk to me, but you haven't said boo for the past year. If you and everyone else is scared the distillery's going under, don't be. You can come back to work right now and we can let this all go.
Wait, more of you left?
I had a crew of 12 yesterday, but everyone's walked off. You any good with tools?
Heck yeah! I had a class 2 mechanist rating.
What's your name?
Gwendolyn Barker.
I'm Kaziz Ming. I'm really good with words.
I could always use marketing people. Can you start today?
No, they can't.
The goons, their brains programmed to respond to command presence, shrank back. Oh, those poor bastards.
My eyes have been opened to what you and every other union stooge has done to all of us. You make promises. You seduce us with so-called living wages, all to distract us from the fact that we are the true owners of this and every other world. You are exploited by the Big Three, and then you come here and exploit us. It's in your nature, and you can never change.
I'm not a scorpion, and you're not a frog. Everyone has to work to make a living.
That's easy for you to say when you own the places we work. If you don't make enough profit, you just close the things down. People lose their jobs, they go hungry, they get desperate.
Or they go find some way to make a living. Are you trying to tell me that there aren't enough jobs on this planet?
Only if you work the cane fields. If you want to spend your life cutting and stacking, sure. But if you want something better, you have to fight for it. That's what Reverend Sarian is showing us, how to fight.
Reverend?
Yes. He's been ordained in the eyes of the universe. He knows the way to liberation, and he's going to teach us. We are history select. What we will start today is going to spread to occupied space until everyone is truly free.
She looked at the goons.
You, keep her here. I have work to do.
The two goons gave each other pained looks.
Do we have to?
Yes!
The goons nodded. They formed a human wall and pushed me into the table so hard it hit the wall. Hot soup spilled on the floor and splashed through my trousers. The goons' massive bulk blocked out any forward escape. Both of them stared down at me, their faces turned to stone masks.
Li Huang! I know Sarian's talking about a cane strike. You know that's going to screw things up for a whole lot of people, right?
When anything happens to disturb profits, what do the capitalists do? They go on strike, don't they? They withdraw their finances from that particular mill. They close it down because there are no profits to be made there. They don't care what becomes of the working class. But the working class, on the other hand, has always been taught to take care of the capitalist interest in the property.
Li Huang, you may have had a tough life on the Kampong, but you do not get to quote Big Bill Haywood back at me. Not until you've gone through half the shit I did to make sure that people like you could get things like schools, money, and healthcare.
Right, I forgot. You and all the other big union heroes got your heads caved in when you squared off against the Big Three. You did your marches, sang your songs, inked your faces to show everyone what you did to protect the workers of occupied space.
Just because you weren't there doesn't mean it didn't happen.
None of that has made my life better. It hasn't made my mom's lungs any better. It hasn't kept people from begging in the street for scraps.
And if you start this strike, it's going to get worse. Please trust me on this.
Why should I do that?
Because I've been through two strikes, and Sarian hasn't. He stayed holed up in Sal's reach. Once you start a strike, things get ugly fast. The food's going to run out, and then the rum's going to run out, and then everyone will be at each other's throats. There's still time to talk and cool things down.
Li Huang walked back. She climbed onto the goons' backs and looked down at me.
Actually, the word went out 10 minutes ago. That bit about raising our fists? That was the signal. Strike committees everywhere are seizing control and telling the people the truth. Your union has failed again, and when we're done and get what we want, you're gonna wish you'd turned things over to us earlier.
She hopped off the goons and left. A few moments later, Odd poked his head around the male goon's biceps.
You sure you don't want soup?
I struggled against the goons, but they held their ground, which held me in place.
Odd, can you help me? Can you get your friends to let me go?
Sorry, Padma, but I never studied command presence. Hey, did you go to B school? Didn't you study it?
Yes, but I really can't do it when I'm being crushed.
Oh, yeah, that's probably tough. She is right, you know.
What?
You are an exploiter. Not that you're a bad person, but you do use people, and you're not really nice about it. Plus, you're really thin-skinned.
You really think that?
When I worked at the plant, I saw how you'd blow people off. They'd come to you for help, and you'd tell them you were busy, but that you'd look into their problems. You never did. Everyone talked about it. People were glad when you took Bloombeck's old slot. Said you deserved it. Now, I didn't agree with that.
You just said I was an exploiter.
Oh, I'm on board with that. But the part about working Bloombeck's slot, I respected you for that. Felt to me like you were doing penance. I've tried telling that to the others, but they just said it was high time you wallowed in shit like the rest of us.
Real short-term memories there.
I know, right? And I'm the one with the neuron damage.
For what it's worth, Odd, they're right. I did blow off people. I was so close to getting my payout, I lost track of my job. But that doesn't excuse what's about to happen.
I think it's already happened, right?
Work with me, Odd. There is always time to get everyone talking. If the cane stops, so does the money. The money stops, it's going to get bad fast.
Okay, I think you're right. Let's get you out of there.
I struggled against the goons.
I still can't get enough breath.
Uh-huh. That's going to be a problem. I was always impressed with the way you could change your voice when you were talking to goons. I remember that one time at Big Lily's, how you did the command presence thing on this one guy, and he had to stand on one foot for an hour. That was funny. Kind of cruel, but funny.
Is that true?
Uh-huh.
Gwendolyn stepped back.
You know, we can't help how we are. All us goons. The Big Three modify our bodies when we go into security services. They change the cell structures of our muscles and bones, and we can't shrink back. My bones are so dense I need to eat coral just for the calcium. Did you know that?
I did not.
We need supplements that can't be made here. We have to scrounge to find what we need just to stay healthy, and the temple provides that.
We're not mindless, you know. I write monologues about humanity's relationship with nature. I was going to perform tonight at the Novice Theater Group, but I had to come here to work.
That was you?
You heard of me?
I heard you're good.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
My point is that we were supposed to be welcomed as members of the union, but we're not. We're thought of as less than human, as these mindless machines that respond to people's voices. I'm sure the Big Three heard you somehow. I can promise they heard us too. It would be nice if someone acknowledged that.
I'm sorry. You're right. I certainly did not think you or anyone like you were capable of getting hurt. That was wrong of me.
I accept your apology.
Now, may I please go and stop this strike?
No. We've got orders to keep you here for the next 48 hours. Also, if you try command presence on us, I'm going to put my hand over your mouth.
Okay. I sat on the floor. Can I get some of that soup now? Odd poured me a bowl. I threw it in the air. Both goons looked up, their mouths wide open. That gave me enough time to roll to my right and vault for the door. I slammed into it and found myself in an alley full of angry, chanting people. Some of them gave me hard stares. I didn't take time to explain. I climbed up and over the crowd, stepping on shoulders and heads all the way out of the alley. When I got to the intersection of Lutyens and Kamakiri, the street was wall-to-wall bodies, all of them holding signs. I saw freeborn, union, old, young, the whole city, the whole planet, moving like the tide up the street. I scanned feeds on the public and saw the same scene everywhere. Human cordons stopped the cane trucks and the airships. Crowds flooded the lifter control room and the cargo depots. The planet had stopped working. Strike. It took me 2 hours to return to Brushhead. I wasn't really in the mood for any more bullshit when I entered my flat and found, yet again, Letty Smythe sitting in my chair. Jennifer, the bodyguard, stood at Letty's shoulder. Letty had helped herself to the Beaulieu's blend. Not, I noted, the old windswept. She may have had no problems breaking and entering into my home, but at least she respected me enough to keep away from the good booze.
This is indeed a remarkable fuck-up.
Don't you have a job to do, or an office to do it in? Letty shook her head and knocked back the rum. She slammed the glass on the table and reached for the bottle.
Oh, damn.
It took her a few tries to get a grip, and even more to get the rum into the glass.
I'll clean the table later, you know.
Letty, I know I'm not privy to what goes on in our union's upper echelons, but outside, it looks to me like the entire city is marching.
Excellent observation.
I was under the impression that Sarian's movement was much, much smaller.
Did I say that? I'm not quite sure.
Maybe if you hadn't jammed my pie, we could go back over my buffer and confirm that.
You still hung up on that? By the way, you look like hell.
I'm going to take a shower. When I'm done, I expect you both to be out of here, and you can threaten me all you want, Letty. I'm too tired to care right now. Well, I intended to take a shower, but nothing came out of the faucet or shower head. Same story with the kitchen taps.
Trouble?
Did you do this?
Oh, no. That would be the strike.
Even at the waterworks?
Everywhere. The entire planet has stopped. All thanks to Evinrud Sarian and his magical marching millions. They're probably going to burn stuff down, starting with my office.
Your office is made of solid poor form.
You know, that's what all my advisors have said. They also told me that this unrest was limited to isolated pockets of Freeborn. Yet, there are many, many of our Union brethren in the streets, all of them chanting for a strike. I'm sure those fuckers will figure some way to burn the Union Hall to the ground. They've probably got some magical Greek fire shit ready to roll as soon as I show up.
All the more reason for you not to be here. I happen to like my flat in its non-burned state.
But don't you see that this is both our problems now?
Uh-uh. I'm not the prez. I'm just a rank-and-file bozo. This is all on you. Not my circus, not my monkeys. I opened the door and waved my hand into the hall with a flourish. Thanks for visiting.
I will cancel your debt now. Right here.
Letty pounded the table, sending her glass bouncing to the floor.
What was that?
Go home, Letty. We both know that you can't make any deals when you're drunk.
The hell I can't.
Letty emptied her pockets on the table. Out came two multi-tools, a mini-torch, keys, breath mints, and 6 matchboxes. She made a show of opening the boxes and showing me their sparkling electronic innards before smashing them to pieces with her fist. Then she scooped them into a little pile and lit the torch. Hey, don't! The cardboard caught, and the stench of burning cane plastic and solder filled my flat.
Don't worry. I got it.
A bright spot of fire rose in the middle of my dining room table. Letty sprinkled the mints on top of the electronic funeral pyre, and the sugar burned a neon green. And that's when the rum ignited.
Whoa!
Shit! The cone of blue flame spread over the tabletop. The rum had seeped into the table's seams, down its legs, onto the floor. Within moments, a full-blown fire had broken out in my living room. I reached for the fire extinguisher next to my stove, but it was too late.
Letty, no!
Letty had grabbed the bottle of Beaulieu's and poured it on the fire, forgetting that 140-proof rum has a tendency to burn when it touches an open flame. The ensuing fireball rolled up and out, catching the curtains and spreading to the ceiling.
Out!
Where are we going?
Jennifer threw Letty over her shoulder and ran for the door. I pulled the pin on the fire extinguisher and sprayed down the table. The foam hit the flames, but it wasn't enough. The fire jumped to the high-back chair. It rolled into my bedroom. I dropped the now-empty extinguisher and bolted for the door. All around me, people had burst from their apartments, holding spouses, children, aquariums. Down the stairs and onto the street we went. The building's muster point was at the poetry out front, and all our neighbors had gathered round in a sooty huddle. By the time we reached the tree, flames gushed from every window on every story. I blinked up a schematic of the building. Everyone trackable had gotten out. I sent texts to everyone who lived at 42 Samarkand, just to be sure. A truck, not a fire truck, but a regular old MacDonald heavy Hanuman cargo truck, nosed its way through the rubberneckers. A dozen people hopped out, all of them carrying axes and fire extinguishers. They wore heavy coats and work boots, the kind of gear you'd see on an airship ground crew. One of them, a freeborn man with tight cornrows and the most impressive mustache I have ever seen outside of a military history book, turned to me.
Is everyone out?
I think so.
Well, did you check?
I'm sorry, who the hell are you anyway? Where's the fire department?
We are the fire department. Well, at least until the pros can get here. The marchers have cut off access from the station, and we were nearby.
I gave their tools, machetes and rakes, the once-over.
You guys are cane cutters?
Best in the biz. We can clear a hectare, do a controlled burn, and have everything stacked all before the dinner bell. They've been doing mop-up burns for the Black Strike, and we were nearby for a...
A window blew out on the top floor, and a sooty face looked down.
Help!
Oh, crap! It was Agamjot Patil, my upstairs neighbor's youngest child. She must have gotten lost on the way out. I sized up Mustache Man. He was too short. Another cutter was more my size.
Give me your coat!
What?
I grabbed at his coat and started peeling it off.
This is my building and you don't know the way up there!
I threw on the coat and checked its pockets. Cane crews had to carry breathing gear and portable heat shelters in case they got caught in the middle of a burn. Even though burns were illegal and inefficient as hell, the regulations for their gear had stuck around. I pulled the respirator mask from one pocket and snapped it over my face. I pulled the shelter, a folded-up foil balloon, out of the coat's other pocket. Mustache Man looked at me.
What are you waiting for? Here!
I grabbed his fire extinguisher and ran to the front steps. I led the cutters up the stairs. The shelter was meant to be sealed, so using it as a cape only prevented me from getting burned. By the time we got to the fourth floor, the extinguishers helped push back the fire, but it couldn't save the structure. Holes had opened up in the floor and ceiling as the wood turned to cinders. I pointed at the door, and we took turns smashing it with our almost empty extinguishers. Finally, the door gave, and we burst into the smoke-filled flat. Agamjot lay beneath the window, one arm hanging outside.
Look in the other flats for anyone else!
I rushed up and slapped my respirator on Agamjot's sooty face. She still had a pulse, and she stirred as the first puffs of clean air hit her lungs. Good girl. I wrapped the shelter around us. I turned to see the ceiling collapse behind me. Another beam smashed to the floor. A wall of burning timber cut me off from the cutters. I picked up Agamjot and cradled her so the respirator would stay on. We'd have to go out the window and use the fire escape. No one liked using the fire escape. The kids wouldn't even climb on it, but it would have to do. As I looked out the window and tried to figure out how to get us both down, something heavy hit the door.
You're not supposed to be here!
I looked over my shoulder. Jennifer stood in the middle of the living room, sparks drifting down on her from a hole in the ceiling. Her clothes were singed and her face was sooty, and she looked pissed. She pocketed a tiny rebreather and closed the gap between us in three fast strides. I had enough time to throw my body over Agamjot before Jennifer brought an elbow down in the middle of my back. My arms gave out, and the kid fell to the ground. I lost my grip on the shelter, and it slid off me to cover Agamjot. At least I think it did. It was hard to tell after the follow-up kick got to the side of my head. I flopped next to the coffee table. Above me, I saw Jennifer, her face backlit by the burning ceiling overhead. She looked at me the way someone would look at a cockroach, and she lifted a boot.
Wait! Why should I?
My head lolled in Agamjot's direction, and Jennifer's eyes followed. The transformation on her face was remarkable. The cool rage melted, and she froze.
You gotta help me get her out! I don't have to do anything you tell me!
Then just be decent and help me help this kid!
Jennifer sneered and flicked away a falling ember. I glanced up. Through the holes in the ceiling, I could see a sagging beam in the floor above. It had a giant crack in its middle, and it looked ready to come apart. I couldn't outfight her, but there was no way she could win against a collapsing roof.
We don't have time for this. What's she paying you?
Are you serious? I know how broke you are.
I own a distillery.
I hate rum.
I'm not asking you for a drink. I'm telling you I can pay more than whatever Letty's paying you.
You can't buy your way out of everything. Definitely not this.
No, but I can buy time. Jennifer looked up, long enough for me to scoop up Agamjot and leap for the fire escape. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Jennifer pivot to grab me. Her nails raked through the jacket, so sharp they cut through to my skin. I clung to the fire escape as the ceiling came down on her. The rest of the building began to collapse in on itself, and the coral steel platform creaked away. Fire escape smashed into the koa tree, and the branches jabbed at us as we came to a gentle halt. I looked down at my neighbors, who looked back at me.
You put your foot on that branch to climb down.
He waved in the direction of my left foot. Below was a well-worn spot in the bark. I clambered to the ground where Mustache Man and his crew had gathered with everyone else. I handed Agamjot to her father. She was still out, but breathing. A small explosion blew out the windows on the second floor. I grabbed Mustache Man by the shoulder.
Can you and your crew make sure this fire doesn't spread?
Like I said, we're the best in the biz.
Don't bullshit me, man! Can you keep this under control?
We'll need help.
You'll get it.
I climbed into the lowest branches of the tree.
Listen up!
I pointed at Mustache Man.
This right here is... What's your name?
Onanefe.
Onanefe and his crew are gonna keep this blaze under control until the pros get here. He'll need your help. Our building's a goner, but that doesn't mean anyone else has to lose their home tonight. Can I count on you? Oh, come on, people! I know I've been busy, but are you really going to tell me that you're not going to work together to keep the rest of this block from going up in smoke?
Who put you in charge?
No one. I have absolutely no authority here. I'm just a regular schmo like the rest of you, but I'm still a schmo who believes in this.
I pointed at the fist on my left cheek.
I still believe in working together to fight anything that threatens us. And right now, this fire is threatening our block and maybe our neighborhood. Onanefe and his crew work in the cane fields. They know how to shut down fires. Their livelihoods depend on that. And I think, Millie, that they might be the most qualified people here to fix our common problem, don't you?
I was just checking.
I thank you for that. Does anyone else have any further objections?
The people looked at each other and shrugged.
Good. Shall we?
Onanefe and his crew started organizing the crowd. An ambulance finally made an appearance. Its bubble lights splashed color across everyone's faces. I ran to the driver's side and banged on the window.
Look, you gotta call search and rescue or someone. There's a woman trapped in there.
The driver looked up. It was the woman I'd seen earlier today at the co-op, the one who'd asked me about the mutual fund. Her face was cold and hard, and I realized she was the spitting image of Jennifer. I took a step back, right into someone that felt as solid as a brick wall. I turned. It was Jennifer. Her clothes torn and burnt, and her face screwed up in a look that said she was going to kick my spine out the top of my head.
Get in.
I was too stunned to protest as I went with her to the back of the vehicle. The Ambo's back doors opened.
Ha!
Letty sat on the bench, an O2 mask to her face. She offered me the mask.
Need a hit?
The recently on fire Jennifer pushed me into the back and pulled the door shut behind her. She sat down next to me and clamped a hand around my upper arm. The Ambo reversed and eased its way onto Samarkand Road. The back bay of the Ambo opened up into the driver's seat so I could see out the windshield. We edged through the crowd, the younger Jennifer pulling her hat down lower on her face.
Do I get to know what's going on?
I tried blinking up a video, but of course I got an eyeful of static. All three of them probably had scramblers. The Jennifer driving the Ambo stepped on the gas. We peeled through the few boulevards free of marchers until we were on the bumpy road to the Kampong. I lost track of time. What with the terrible road conditions and the human vice grip on my arm, we eased to a halt, and the older Jennifer let go.
Ah!
Ugh. Ice fire zipped up and down my arm. She had left marks in my skin. She might have even left fingerprints. The older Jennifer wiped the soot off her face with a towel. She tossed aside the dirty cloth, and her skin glowed like she had swallowed a searchlight.
They make them a lot tougher than when you were an indenture.
I eyed Jennifer and realized she had no pores. Her skin was a smooth, continuous surface, as if she'd been glazed and fired like a ceramic statue.
Carbon silicates in her skin, 5 times the hemoglobin, funky muscle fibers. She could tear an entire goon squad apart before you could blink.
And it looks like she comes in pairs.
Triplets, actually.
So is the third the maiden or the crone?
She's none of your business.
Let's talk.
Letty climbed past me and opened the doors. The smell of caramelized sugar and burnt iron palm barrels hit me, and I didn't have to climb out to see we were parked in front of the old windswept distillery.
What, you weren't satisfied with torching my house? You gonna do the same to my distillery, too?
Seeing how there's no fire response out here, that would be pointless. Besides, I like your rum. You coming?
The Jennifer in the EMT outfit appeared at her side, and the Jennifer in the ambo gave me a jab with her finger. I sat back and crossed my arms.
I'm not going anywhere with you until you tell me what the fuck is going on. Starting with why she tried to kill me.
Nonsense. She wouldn't do that.
Are you gaslighting me, Letty? It's bad enough you're packing scramblers. Now you're going to tell me that your bodyguard didn't try to kill me?
We've talked. Things got a little more heated than they were supposed to.
Not the best choice of words, considering you burned my building down.
Oh, please. Your whole block is a dump. Once this all blows over, it's going to get rebuilt.
What whole thing? You mean this strike?
I vaulted out of the ambulance, clearing the distance between us in a few steps. Both Jennifers leaped to Letty, their hands loose at their sides. I didn't care.
Did you let this whole thing happen on purpose?
You are sharp, Padma. I shouldn't have let you take that crap job. You'd be a lot better off working for me.
Thanks, but I'm not a fan of arson.
I don't smell any alcohol. Were you even drunk?
I have no idea how to help you here, Letty. I really don't. I went to another one of Sarian's churches and... Oh, that's right. You've already seen everywhere I've been and reviewed everything I said. Why rehash it for you?
But I don't know what you're thinking, Padma. It's not enough to know where you've been. I don't know what your gut is telling you about the strike.
That it's stupid and wrong-headed and that you should end it right away.
How do you suggest I do that?
Give the strikers what they want.
Which is?
What, you don't know?
I have yet to get a list of formal demands from anyone. All I've seen is the city flooded with angry freeborn and a whole lot of union people walking alongside them.
Then maybe you can hack into all those pies and find out for yourself.
I can't.
Bullshit.
It's the truth, Padma. Hacking into your pie was a one-time trick. I start getting into everyone's heads, I'm going to leave fingerprints, and then it's all over for me.
Ah, so it's perfectly acceptable for you to violate only my head. Got it.
You think this is easy for me? You think I like having to go to these measures? We are up against the wall, Padma. Not just the executive committee, but everyone on this planet, union and freeborn alike. I told you about the Big Three cutting back on the amount of cane they're going to buy from us, right?
You have, though I don't see why you haven't told everyone else about it.
Because I didn't want a full-blown panic.
Instead, you've got a full-blown strike. Great move.
And we can still stop it.
You keep saying we, but I really think you mean you, as in me.
Because you can still move around in all the circles that matter. I can't go out into the streets without worrying about getting assaulted.
You're the president of the union. It's your job to talk to everyone, especially when they're unhappy and pissed off. That's why we elected you.
Good to know I had your vote.
You're not getting it again.
Come on, Padma. What about our deal?
It went up in smoke with my building.
I don't remember those terms.
Well, gee, Letty, maybe if you hadn't insisted on all this cloak and dagger bullshit, we could have come to actual terms. I should have sussed this before. You're using me as a proxy, even though I've been out of any serious union work for almost 2 years. You talked about the strike as if it were something on the horizon when it was ready to explode today. Not even Sarian could motivate that many people to march on short notice. He's been out for 3 months, and that tells me he's been building his movement for 3 months. And there is no way someone in your position couldn't have seen this coming. You're too wired in, Letty.
Even I can get things wrong.
Not like this. You got me wrapped up in this for some reason. You burned my building down for some reason. And you know what? I have no desire to figure those reasons out. I've got rum to make. I walked up to the front door of the distillery.
What are you going to do when you run out of cane, Padma?
I gave her the finger. After spending several days trying to see if I could get the distillery up and running by myself, and finding out the hard way that I couldn't, I knew I'd have to find a way of getting back to the city. The crew had taken their bicycles with them, and the distillery was 3 clicks past the end of the red bus. I pinged Jilly, but only got a message, "Sorry, but we're all on strike." It took me a moment to realize it came from the Publix sysadmins. They had walked off the job, too. Terrific. I'd have to walk until I could hitch a ride into town. My former employees had taken their shares of the hurricane food home with them, so the only thing left for breakfast were the stale date bars and the survival gear. I pocketed the bars. Those calories would have to last me until I could finagle my way into a meal. Some enterprising cook would have set up shop at the red bus stop. Strikes were a great time for entrepreneurs, provided they dealt in food, booze, or weapons. I headed down the road. The sun poked over the horizon. The first 2 kilometers, I had the road all to myself. Eventually, I saw people coming out of the dawn fields. The road was crowded by the time the egg yolk sun had made a full appearance. I had the feeling none of this would be over or easy. I smiled at a young mother walking next to me. She wore battered work clothes and had a baby strapped to her chest, her deck jacket acting as a blanket. She was freeborn, and she made a lot of nervous glances at my cheek. Busy day.
Uh-huh.
I haven't seen it like this since the last City Cup.
I don't really follow footy.
I don't blame you. Last year's match was a complete mess. Still, gotta go where the customers go, you know? Rum doesn't pour itself.
You a distiller?
I am indeed. Padma Mehta.
Miyumi Green, with an E at the end.
I don't think I've met any freeborn with a last name.
My wife's idea. She's union.
You both work in the city?
Uh-huh. I'm a welder on a digester farm. Faye, also with an E. She's a safety inspector at a refinery.
Hard work.
It is. Well, we're building a future for this little stinker, so it's worth it. Most of the time.
I never did those gigs, but I know the feeling. Are you both on strike? Mayumi's face grew hard before she relaxed and looked at me. She couldn't have been more than 25, but she now looked 50.
I didn't want to. Neither of us did. But we've had daycare cut over the past year. It used to be I could drop off Lucius and know he'd be in good hands until Faye picked him up. We were subsidized, but that dried up earlier this week. The money was just gone. Now we can't find anyone else to watch him because all of our sitters had to find better paying jobs. I tried leaving Lucius with my gran, but then her meds allowance got cut, too, and her vertigo came back, and now I have to find someone to watch over her, too.
But why go into the city?
To let the press know I'm not going to stand for this. That, and I've got to pay my respects. Uncle Gorski died last week, and I couldn't get to the funeral.
I'm sorry to hear that. About all of it.
Uncle was old, so it was a matter of time. And unless you're in charge of the Social Services Committee, the rest isn't your problem.
No, I wanted to tell her. It was. Lucius, the baby, had woken up by the time we got to the terminal. The queue for the red bus, the line that went direct to the city center, snaked around and back on itself. An ouroboros of anxious people. Hawkers selling condoms and beignets worked the line. I bought a coconut and a bag of bao and offered some to Mayumi.
Sorry, but I really shouldn't.
Because I'm an evil distiller? A few people in the queue turned to me. One woman shot me a death glare.
I know your name, Ms. Mehta.
Padma.
Okay, Padma. Like I said, I know your name, and you've got a good rep. But you're kind of the problem.
Because I make rum?
You need to be real careful here. A lot of people, they work the cane fields, and they're not too crazy about distillers or union. There's a lot of bad blood out here, you know?
I don't think I do, but I have the feeling I should.
I got family who've been screwed on paychecks or lost bennies. Everyone's used to the price of cane rising and falling, but ever since the Black Stripe, it's gotten bad. And there's a lot of people who are still pissed at that guy, the one with the church. He stole people out of the campong.
He stole union people, too.
I know.
The queue shuffled forward.
But we have union people out here who are promising the world and delivering nothing. I mean, I came to the city, learned a trade, so it doesn't affect me directly. But my family, who are still here, they're hurting, and they want to see the union hurt back. They're all coming into town to bring everything to a standstill, starting by leaving the cane fields.
You know there are union people on strike, too.
I know. It's like there's this one level of union people. People like Faye and everyone on her crew. They all work, they pay dues, they give back what they take. And then there's this level above. The ones who run the committees, and they just take. No giving. I don't know what kind you are, but if you're in the co-op, it's like you're on the same level as the higher-ups. You're standing on everyone's backs.
I must have looked horrified because she brightened up.
But not you. I mean, probably not you. I really like your theme song, and you don't sound like that.
Thanks. One red bus after another lined up at the terminal's entrance, each one filling within minutes before chugging off for town. All of them had Strike Express, no local stops, on their front signs. It took an hour before the queue worked its way to the loading bay. Mayumi offered me the seat next to her. I knew at any point I could have gotten word to Jilly and gotten a lift, but now, no. I had to go into town with everyone else and find out just what was pissing them off. And I heard plenty of it. An old guy was sitting in front of us. A snow-white braid ran down his back. He had two anchors inked below his union fist.
You know how much I used to get paid an hour? 65 yuan. 50 hours a week, guaranteed.
Yeah, but that's before the work dried up.
This from a woman across from him. Her betel-nut-stained lips were as red as her sunburnt face. Her coat was dusted with flour.
There was a time when everyone had work in the off-season, before the harvest. Now, no one can afford my buns.
I still can, darling.
Her seatmate, a wizened old man with a diving regulator strapped around his neck, winked at her.
Things have gotten worse, all right. Sexually harassing someone. We're married.
Not if you keep embarrassing me in public.
Well, it's not like you let me embarrass you in private. Look, I get what you're saying. Everything's been sliding downhill ever since the lifter blew up.
Nah, it's been bad since before. When we first met, there was so much traffic coming into Santee, it blocked out the stars at night. You remember that?
You can't blame everything on the Big Three, or on the Union, or on us.
A freeborn man behind us leaned forward. He clutched a tool bag to his chest.
Who said I'm blaming it on us?
I did. Every time the contract comes up, we get an offer to join with the Union. We always say no.
That's because we're not union.
Yeah, but we're also not Big Three. We all get screwed by them. Shouldn't we wise up and work together?
What, like those terrorists from the FOC?
They weren't terrorists.
Really? Then what do you call the people who blew up that post office?
Assholes.
I didn't like the violence, but the people in the FOC were right. We had to get a seat at the table.
And lose our independence? No way.
What independence is that? You're just as dependent on the Big Three as we are. Or are you going to tell me you don't work in the city supporting some contract gig?
Why, you got a problem with that? I gotta make a living.
We all do. But you freeborn talking about independence is like a piglet complaining it has to go to some other sow's teat.
That makes no sense.
I know. I haven't had my coffee this morning.
If we wanted to, we freeborn could completely cut ourselves off from you inks. We can always grow our own food, make our own goods, live our own lives.
That's why you make pastries 10 hours a day in a shareholder bakery?
I swear if I could afford a lawyer, I would divorce your ass in a heartbeat.
30 years you've been saying that, and yet you keep coming back. You know I'm the only one who's got what you need.
Well, I can always find another plumber.
He's got a point. All of us work for the Big Three one way or the other.
How you figure?
Who buys your pastries?
Just people. Anyone.
And where do they get the money to buy their pastries?
From their jobs.
And every job here centers around cane. You're growing it, you're cutting it, you're turning it into molasses, and all of it goes up the lifter.
Not all of it.
Okay. We keep some to power things, but my point is that almost everyone is supporting or supported by cane. Occupied space runs on burning cane. Freeborn people grow it. Union people process it. Big Three people consume it. We get Big Three money and it comes trickling down into our pockets so people can buy your pastries.
Well, I can always quit. Start my own shop. I don't have to depend on someone filling a slot for me.
Then why don't you do it?
Because the money's too good.
Or it was.
Yeah, no doubt there.
The red bus slowed as it approached North Terminal. The traffic was thick. Blues from San Monique, greens from Hawthorne, yellows from way the hell on the other side of the island. There were no police to direct traffic, just jostling for position at the loading bays. Our bus came to a stop, and the driver looked up at the mirror.
You got 5 minutes to unload.
Or what?
Or you'll be stuck in a bus. I'm taking this to the depot, and then I'm marching with everyone else.
As we disembarked, people handed out signs saying strike and New Deal now. Some of them had steel temple pins, and a few had added the supernova to their union ink on their cheeks. I caught sight of Mayumi and her son before they were swept into the mass of bodies. Mayumi Green, with an E. I hoped she would be okay.